Daniel chapter 2 verse 46 through chapter 3 verse 13. The ending of Daniel 2 seems very satisfactory, with Daniel and his friends being promoted to places of high honor. Yet, to the discerning eye, two omissions on the part of Nebuchadnezzar can be seen. These errors led to the confrontation recorded in Daniel 3. First omission. Nebuchadnezzar worshipped and honored Daniel, Daniel 2:46, but did not Daniel's God. Oh, he gave credit to the Lord, saying, "Of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings," Daniel 2:47. But notice that it was still a matter of Daniel's God with no real submission in his heart. Daniel had been useful to him. Daniel would be honored. Daniel would be told what a wonderful God he had. But he, Nebuchadnezzar, would go on without change, serving his own gods. What a sad omission. Second omission, in the matter of the promotion of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, it was Daniel who suggested honoring others who honored the true God. If the king had no interest in truly honoring and accepting Daniel's God, he had even less interest in honoring God's people. Yes, he went along with Daniel when Daniel suggested that his friends be set in authority with him, probably felt good about doing so. Yet he did not recognize that if faith in God made Daniel what he was, others with that same faith were just as important as Daniel. His failure to recognize the value of all God's faithful people was another serious error. After a period of time, Nebuchadnezzar undertook a project which brought him into direct conflict with Daniel's God, and thus with Daniel's godly companions. He set up a huge gold idol, about 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide, and arranged a special meeting so that all his officials could join him in his idolatry. We need not look far to realize where he came up with this idea. God gave him a dream concerning a great image whose head of gold represented Nebuchadnezzar himself. He then set up a great golden image. The parallel is too close to be mistaken. He missed the point of the dream. Instead of seeing the end of those things, taking warning and submitting to the power of God, he saw only the bright beginning and delighted in the earthly glory which he possessed. Nor can we doubt that, however the king may have represented his motives in this matter, he was acting to take the worship of men into his own power and person. Another misstep. This points up another terrible and dangerous misstep by the king. Nebuchadnezzar fell into the error which many, many others have followed. He took something good and true, which God truly had revealed to him, and produced with it something bad, something false, which was in opposition to God. How? Colossians 2:18 warns of a type of man who enticed people into worshiping of angels, intruding into those things which he hath not seen, vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind. 2 Peter 3:16 speaks of the writings of Paul in which are some things hard to be understood, which they that are unlearned and unstable wrest, or twist, as they do also other scriptures unto their own destruction. The man of Colossae had certainly seen some true things, if only he had stuck to them, waiting on God to show more truth when he was ready for it, he would have continued very well. Instead, he chose to reason with his fleshly mind. In this, he was acting through pride and confidence in his own powers to understand things of the Spirit. He was puffed up. He did come up with something to add to what God had shown to him earlier, but it was wrong. He was only making dark guesses about things he had never seen. To support such wrong conclusions, men must invariably begin to twist what has already been revealed in order to make fit what they have decided upon. Such a course is a result of ignorance, of rejecting opportunities to learn of God and his truth. This is the path which Nebuchadnezzar followed in order to get from his God-given dream to the idolatrous image on the plain of Dura. Then an herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." Daniel 3 verses 4 through 6. Of the king's order commanding all to worship the God he had made, little must be said. Notice two things. First, as is often the case with that which is a corruption of truth, fear was the major inducement for the people to bow down and join him in his error. A burning fiery furnace for those who failed to obey was the only incentive involved in this evil worship. Also, music played a large part. We do not criticize music or musical instruments. David used song and instruments of music to glorify God and bless his people. The New Testament encourages us to continue in that pattern. Nevertheless, false religion can often provide more impressive instruments and orchestras than places of true worship can. Be impressed by truth and by faithfulness to God's revelation, and not the size of men's idols or the quality of their music. Before we come to the wonderful conflict which arose between the Gentile king and three godly Jews, perhaps we should ask what has happened to Daniel. His absence from this gathering of the empire's most prominent men is conspicuous. Did Nebuchadnezzar excuse him from attendance at this terrible worship service? The king did seem to have a blind and ignorant respect for this man whose God he did not want. Daniel could not have been flattered by that misplaced reverence, but it might explain why he was not on the plain of Dura that day. While we cannot know with certainty where Daniel was, we may be sure that, as his three companions had prayed when he was moving at center stage before the king, so he was praying for them on this day. Nebuchadnezzar gave no thought to these three men who were as faithful as Daniel and who, like him, would not bow down to a false god. This seems and was a terrible, calloused attitude. But remember, God used it. His very act of rebellion was used and brought forth yet another demonstration of the greatness of the God of heaven and earth. It also gave us opportunity to see the testimony of faith which God had hidden in the hearts of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We might otherwise have not seen what God had done in them. Truly, we serve a great God who can turn all things, even sin, to his purpose. If you do not believe that he does this, remember the cold wickedness of the religious men who conspired to crucify Jesus. But where sin abounded, grace did much more abound. Romans 5:20b. In Daniel 2, when the wise men did not measure up to his demands, Nebuchadnezzar's wrath was terrible. The occasion before us was no different. Daniel 3 verse 13 says that when the king heard of the refusal of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to obey his wicked decree, he commanded in his rage and fury that they be brought before him. Never forget that an ungodly religion is the most brutal, bloodthirsty force on earth. For ye have heard of my conversation in time past in the Jews' religion, how that beyond measure I persecuted the church of God and wasted it, and profited in the Jews' religion above many my equals in mine own nation, being more exceedingly zealous of the tradition of my fathers. Galatians 1:13-14. What made Paul the chief of sinners was the fact that he was exceedingly zealous in a religious system that rejected the plan of God. When these men would not unite with him in his religious sins, the king was ready to kill them. Let us pause in following these events. Satan has a plan with which he proposes to thwart the purposes of God. Read 2 Thessalonians 2 verses 3 through 8. He will put forward a ruler of the Gentiles who will seek to take for himself the worship which belongs to the King of the Jews. The man will be the beast, the Antichrist, the man of sin, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God. God will not let him succeed, and indeed he will not allow that plan to begin its course until such time as it suits him. Satan, being in rebellion against God, keeps trying to carry out his plan before the time when God has purposed to allow it. Paul wrote, "For the mystery of iniquity doth already work." 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 7. This is that spirit of Antichrist whereof ye have heard that it should come, and even now already is in the world. 1 John 4, 4. God has allowed Satan's false starts and failed efforts to be used for a good purpose. They give a picture of what must come when the Antichrist takes his awful place. Thus, once again, we see in Nebuchadnezzar's acts a foreshadowing of what will occur when God lifts his hand and allows Satan to have his way for a little time. Concerning the false prophet who will promote the Antichrist yet to come, Revelation 13:15 says, "And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed." Once again, we see a parallel which is too close to be mistaken. It is not God's primary purpose to tell men of those events or of that man. Jesus is the center of all which God would reveal to men. He warns against the false Christ, that men might trust the true Christ. Jesus himself warned, "Take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many." Then, when the great tribulation comes, "If any man shall say unto you, Lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not." Matthew 24, verses 4, 5, and 23. God wants us, and also especially Israel, to come to know and believe that Jesus is the Christ, that since he came in the flesh, there can be no Christ but him. Failure to accept and confess this fundamental truth is what John called the spirit of Antichrist. 1 John 4:3. When the old serpent starts his masquerade, parading signs and lying wonders, it will be necessary for men to let God show them the falseness of Satan's way, lest they be deceived and caught in his net. Of course, we should not expect to be on the earth when the evil pawn of Satan exerts his power. Revelation 3:10 says to a faithful, faith-filled body of believers, "Because thou hast kept the word of my patience, I also will keep thee from the hour of temptation which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth." Despite the pretensions of some of today's popular teachers of religion who are puffed up in their fleshly minds concerning things they have not seen, the promise of Christ means exactly what it says. God has promised to keep his faithful ones out of the time of Antichrist's full sway on the earth. He will do it by taking them out of the earth. God has revealed these things to us that we might see his power, his triumphant purpose. His desire for us is that we might stir up ourselves to know and believe all he has said he will do. He works through the faith and faithfulness of his people.